Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I can't find Scotty. Katie was panicked. Don't freak, honey. Her husband, Ray, put a hand on her shoulder. He's right over there behind that log. Shh, don't disturb him. What's he doing? Katie whispered, quietly making a beeline for her four-year-old. Ray gently grabbed her arm. Why don't we let him be a minute? He's found an anthill, I think, and he's fascinated. Just then, Scotty looked up, found his parents, and called, Guess what? Ants are coming out of a log. Wow, his dad responded. Let's have a look. He bent down and said, Yep, they're coming out all right. These ants like wood a lot. They're called termites. Termites? Katie sat down with her head in her hands. She looked over at her husband. Remind me again why we couldn't just go to the mall. From a parent's perspective, how can outdoor experiences be enriching for children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has worked with outdoor experiences for children over many years. Laurie Jenkins taught secondary school science for years, held leadership positions as a master science teacher, presented at national science teacher conventions on inquiry in science, wrote middle school science curricula for various publishers, and became an administrator for the Montgomery County, Maryland Public Schools. She is currently the supervisor of outdoor field investigations for 20,000 students a year. The Grade 6 residential program is a particular highlight. It is part of the Grade 6 curriculum and provides every sixth grade student an opportunity to use the outdoors as a classroom to study the ecology and environmental science of the watershed. Laurie Jenkins is also the mother of three grown children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Laurie.
Thank you so much. It is a pleasure to be here.
Besides the obvious health benefits, why is the outdoors a good place for learning?
The outdoors becomes a natural lab for students to study the concepts they learn at school. Some of the ones that come to mind immediately are in the early grades when students need to practice how to categorize and count. On a simple outdoor outing, students can pick up seeds, rocks, and leaves and use them to practice categorizing or counting. They can categorize and classify living versus non-living. They can categorize whether things are heavier than a pencil or lighter than a pencil. Older students easily can do where they're basically finding a critter. They're looking for 10 critters. Find 10 critters, find 15 critters. And as they walk along, they're looking for evidence of those critters. So that's sort of the formal learning. But then there's also a lot of informal learning that goes on when students just go outside and lay down in the grass and look up at those trees and watch how the leaves are moving or watch the clouds moving in the sky. And there's learning involved in that where they may feel like writing a poem or writing something, a story about those clouds moving or making up stories about what the clouds look like.
So it sounds like we can do a lot of this with our kids, of course, finding rocks or finding shells, different kinds of grass growing. But there's also a lot of wonderful alone time that kids can have in the outdoors as well.
Very much so, right. And that's the part that I think kids like, is that being silent, which is something that many children don't have very much of anymore. They're connected to the technology. And just that idea of going out there and listening is major. A lot of students have just never done that at all. We see that when we have our little kids in our classes in our kindergarten, first grade, and we just have them listen, and all of a sudden they hear things they've never heard before.
Evidently, they can learn some of this categorization very young. I was with my 4 and 6-year-old grandchildren over this past weekend, and my granddaughter is very, very much afraid of thunder and lightning. My grandson knows all about the clouds. He said, Hey, I see that cloud. You know what that cloud is? And she said, don't tell me. I don't want to know. He said, that's a cumulonimbus cloud. We're going to have a thunderstorm. She began screaming. This is the little one provoking the older one. But it was very interesting. And then, of course, it happened. And he said, I told you.
They can get good very fast, especially if they're interested.
Sense of empowerment. Yeah.
What should parents remember about outdoor experiences for kids? Is there some nugget that we should really keep in mind?
I think the most important thing for parents is that this should be a time for students to explore and experience the outdoors when you take them out. You don't necessarily ever have to think about, oh, I need to teach them something. So parents don't have to be loaded up with a lot of information. More, it's about exploring. Let's go outside and think, I wonder why the stars are twinkling tonight. I wonder why that insect is just sitting there and not moving.
I would think also when you're done with your experience and you're back inside and you're making dinner or doing laundry and the kids are around, might be a good time to recap what happened and talk about it a little bit so you can sort of see where the experiences went and what was significant to the child.
Oh, very much so, right. And before you go out, too, you can talk about what you might see out there. I mean, that's sort of setting the stage for what we might be seeing or doing out there, and then going out and then coming back and talking about it. The other thing, and I like to remind people, is we think of outdoor experiences only at day, but and outdoor experiences can be any length. They can be 3 minutes. Let's go out and check on what the moon looks like tonight or what stars are out in the sky. Or you can have a very long experience, and you'd have to gauge that on your children and what you want to do with your kids. But that whole piece of just going out and looking at the sky as a family at nighttime and looking at the moon and saying, does it look like that every night? Is the moon in the same place every night? That's the kind of thing that parents can do, encourages the students to ask questions or the children to ask questions, your own kids. And then you know, you can explore it by going back out another night. Is the moon in the same place? Is the shape the same? And of course, kids are connected to books. So they could, if they're interested, they could always go back in and you can look things up on the computer or in a book.
I think one of the most fun things to have in a house is an atlas that's geared towards children. In there, they can find the answers to so many things.
When we were visiting our 4-year-old grandson not too long ago, there was a beautiful, beautiful sunset. And we all went outside because it was warm weather, and we all looked at the sunset. And he sat down on the steps of his front porch and said, sit down with me, to me, and put his arm around me. And he said, look at that sky. And then we just sort of talked about the colors, but he was so happy. You know, those kinds of things are very special memories about the outdoors that you can connect with other people as well.
Very much so. And we encourage our kids to be doing the same thing, to actually sit down and write a little reflection about what they felt or what they saw. And it helps them to connect and reflect on that rather than so much for students these days and for children at home is images, quick images going by on a screen or whatever. And this that reflection time is very important. So talking with somebody or writing it, those are wonderful ways to share that experience.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the great outdoors.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Laurie Jenkins about the educational value of the great outdoors.
What kinds of things do kids not tend to notice that we should remember to call to their attention?
Things that students tend not to notice at all are plants. And the reason is there's so much of it out there. And so what I like to do with kids and with my own kids, and it was interesting to me to see how much more they got out of being outdoors when we were doing it, is what happens, I think, with plants is there's so many of them and they're all over the place that it just, you know, you can't tell the forest from the trees. It's just all one green. And so we did leaf collections just to show now you get 10 different leaves and students immediately think, wow, these are not all the same. These trees are actually different or these plants are actually different from each other. So that's one that they don't think of plants as just being plants, just like cars are not cars. Most of them will know some of the cars from each other, but they don't know one tree from another tree or a shrub. So that's one. Same thing with different kinds of fungi, mushrooms and things that are not green that are growing on trees or that are yellow or bright orange. Those are the fungi, and kids can go and look at those. And what are they? Well, they help to decompose dead things, and you can find them in a dead log as you're walking through the woods. So those are the kinds of things that I think that sometimes kids will tend not to notice because they're just running by or pushing by. And I wanted to just say, too, that when you are exploring with children, they're nearly the ones who lead. Parents, and I was guilty of the same thing. It's a mile hike. I'm going through the mile. You know, let's go and I'll. But children really need to sort of just take their own. You know, they want to climb that rock over there that's about 3 feet off the ground and they want to climb it 5 times. Well, you have to know that and be prepared. That's part of taking kids out on a hike.
I once read something lovely about grandparents and grandchildren. And the point of that little article was that grandparents don't have an agenda and they have time, and let the children look at the snail and watch the snail for a while. And it's not going very fast and it's not going to do very much, but that's interesting. And just sort of for us all to sort of have that mentality to just take the time.
I think the other thing that's interesting, and you were mentioning different kinds of leaves, in differentiating what's out there is if they can plant anything, whether it's flowers, whether it's vegetables. Even in the city, you use large flower pots and you put some earth in and let them plant. They love to watch things grow, and they do notice the difference.
Even in our school systems, there's a lot of looking at different kinds of gardens, and students learned hugely about that. Even taking care of, but also just about how a plant grows. It sort of happens, and they notice it one day, but they don't see the process of plant growth and development. So very important. Students frequently will not notice all of the things if they stay still, and they can listen to the little creek or the wind blowing through the trees, that they really can hear the birds, the insects, all those kind of things. You get down and you watch what the ants are doing, you know, where are they going?
They love that.
Do you believe that that ant is carrying something that's bigger than it is, and you know how strong they are? And
the other thing is that the outdoors is a smorgasbord for the senses.
Right, and when we're doing kindergarten, first grade, we very much, because that's one of the things that the students are studying at that 5-year-old, 6-year-old, they're learning about their senses more and more from nursery school up. But we do the same, except for tasting, unless mom and dad have said, know what that thing is. But, you know, and I do want to bring up, safety is another thing always when you're outdoors, that people stay on the trails, that if it's a marked trail, you stay on the trails or within the perimeter of the trail. There's a lot of good reasons for doing that. Plus, you're keeping nature healthy by not having people trample through all over. And the typical thing, insect repellent, suntan lotion, if you're going out in the sun, the things that people need to remember, food with kids and water, a little snack. A little water. All very good things when you're taking children outside.
We talk about budding scientists a little bit, but what about budding artists out in the outdoors?
Years ago, I had the good fortune of, when I first got out of college, of being a nature counselor at a camp. And it was wonderful because the kids, that's the kind of stuff they love to do. So we would build little faces out of nuts that we would find on the ground and create collages out of nuts and seeds and things like that. And my more artistic students, whatever they came up with was 18 times better than anything I could even think of. The other is leaf patterns. There's a technique for splattering paint over the perimeter of the leaf, and then the student lifts the leaf up, and there's that beautiful pattern of whatever leaf it happens to be. And they can do 10 of those and then look them up and find out the names. Rubbings of trees, another really, really good thing. All kinds of fun things for kids to do.
Are there other guidelines that might be helpful for us with our collectors? I, of course, had children who wanted to collect acorns. And we learned what happens if you keep a bunch of acorns in a cigar box.
One child had a rock collection, another had a really beautiful shell collection, and we would add to those. Everybody would add to those in the family. Students might collect, say, lightning bugs, things that light at night, fireflies. Normally, you collect them, keep them a night, and let them go the next morning. As much as possible, we like to return everything to nature, especially if it's a living thing. But those rocks do very well in, as you're saying, a shoebox or a cigar box, and you can try to identify them. We just enjoy that they're so different from each other. And same thing with shells. These days, people are using photographs. They're taking their cameras out and taking pictures. And that's a beautiful way. You can get up close. You can get a magnifier and take a picture through the magnifier. There are a lot of ways of using photography and making your collections a photographic collection, too, nowadays, with digital photographs being so readily available and so many people having them.
Do they still learn to mount the bugs in collectors' boxes?
There are very good books about that. I was thinking about bringing that up. The insects go on very thin pins. There are really nice bug boxes that are not expensive that can be purchased. So the amateur insect collector can actually pin in and put that little label where they found that insect. And you look like you've had somebody in your family doing that.
Yes.
And a date, usually the date of where you found it and the date and the city, if you've moved around from different places or you're on vacation, to say where you found that. So yes, you can do that. Butterflies are a little tricky because you actually have to have a spreading board. There's a board where the body goes in the middle and they spread the wings up onto the sides of the board until it's totally dry. But that still can be done, and it's a lot of fun, and they're not, you know, for an avid insect collector. And I've got a lot of entomology friends through college and after, and a lot of those entomologists started out as very young children collecting insects and collecting butterflies and doing all that. So I would suggest to parents, if you have a student that a child that is interested in that, I would jump on it, because they may show a strong interest that may become a career. And it's a great career. It's a really good career.
If we're not scientists or naturalists ourselves, what are good ways to encourage looking at the natural world? Some of us will see a bug and go, oh, yuck. And so how can we combat that tendency?
We always have parents with us when we do these classes for students during the daytime. And when we're talking with the kids, we're also talking with the parents about proper things to do. And one, of course, always is to show interest and enthusiasm and that positiveness. Instead of, oh, yuck, it's, oh, look how interesting that is. Oh, I wonder why. Changing your normal way of responding, oh, yuck, oh my gosh, it's crawling on me, to something very positive. You do not need any formal knowledge on this. I wonder why. And we ask the children to do the same thing. I wonder why. I wonder what would happen if. Those kind of questions are great with kids. The other thing that I would suggest to parents to say with children is to remember to tell the kids, today we're looking all around. Look up, look down, look right, look left, all over, because that's what you want to be looking at. Then for parents, you can do scavenger hunts. We use scavenger hunts all the time. And you don't need to know a lot to do that. You can make a scavenger list of 10 things, and one of them could be find something that has bristles, find something that is smooth, find something that is yellow. And they can go out with a paper bag in the area that you have set aside and collect those things in a scavenger hunt. And scavenger hunts work great. Usually little ones need games to make it more interesting for them. So scavenger hunts are really good way to do that. The other thing I would point out to parents, another way to share the outdoors, is reading a book outdoors with your children. Another wonderful thing to do. And if it's an action-adventure, outdoor adventure story, all the better. But that whole idea of using the outdoors as another mode for reading is wonderful. It's a wonderful sharing experience.
Even poetry, which we don't think of as connecting with the outdoors, is a nice way. And sometimes kids can make up their own rhymes or poems about being outdoors.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on the great outdoors.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Laurie Jenkins about the educational value of the great outdoors. One of my children started college, I think, a week early. They had a program a week before school actually started, and everyone was required to read a specific book. And all the discussions of that book during that week were outdoors on different parts of the campus. It got the kids to different parts of the campus. It gave all of them a common ground for discussion. I thought it was a very clever idea.
That's a wonderful idea. I'd like to do that if I had longer time with that grade 6 program you were talking about. We would definitely be doing more of that.
What kinds of surprises have you seen when kids are exposed to the enrichment of the great outdoors?
I think one of the most interesting thing I've found is that kids really like being explorers. And a lot of students coming have not had very much experience with the outdoors at all. So one, they find that many students before they come to us are nervous about the outdoors, just the whole idea of being out. We're out with a little six-year-old and I was walking with her and she had never been in the woods before. And she really did think that it was filled with foreboding things.
Monsters.
That, right, exactly. It was amazing. So I was holding one hand as we were walking through, and one of her little friends, a little boy, kept saying to her, "Oh, it's okay, it's okay." He had the other hand, and into the woods we went. And it was just wonderful. So by the end of it, she felt comfortable. She knew she was okay. She was safe. So I think that's one, that students realize that it's not scary and it's okay and it's a nice place to be, a nice and calm place to be. I think the other thing that happens is that students get to be better observers. Before that, again, the outdoors is just like this big outdoors and nobody sees the forest from the trees or the trees from the forest. Once they're out there, students frequently become better observers of what's going on in the outdoors and see things specifically, which is, of course, very important, just to see the diversity of everything that's out there. And then the last thing I was going to say is with 12-year-olds, some students will come back, like, you know, with what we do, we take kids out unless it's thunderstorming. This is with my own kids. Go out in the rain. You know, you just dress for it. So you can have a lot of good activities as long as it's not dangerous out. You can do all that. One child said to me, "I am tough. I realized that I could do this. I'm strong." And I thought that was a wonderful thing because they realized, wow, you know, it doesn't look perfect out. I don't have to run home to air conditioning or heat or to be dry. I actually can be outdoors and I'm okay. I can survive this. So that is a very good thing for students to do too. And that's been a surprise. It was a surprise for me to see the kids respond in that way.
Before we close, we wanted to know, Laurie, what resources you would recommend for our listeners who want to pursue some of the issues we've been discussing.
Some of the resources that we really like where I work and also at home, one of them is called Sharing Nature with Children, and that is by the author Joseph Cornell. He actually wrote this book over 20 years ago and then put a new edition out in 1998. It's extremely popular with parents and with teachers who want to take their children outdoors. So for many people, it is a major book that is with them all the time, especially anybody interested in taking students outside. And then a very recent book, which is wonderful, written, it's a little bit broader, but it's just about the whole idea of helping children experience the outdoors, is the book called Last Child in the Woods, and it's by Richard Louvre. And this book helps to explain why the outdoors is so important for children and part of their normal growth and development, and also why many people in general are suffering somewhat from their disconnection with the outdoors. And so the book talks a lot about that and some of the research with that piece. The other, of course, with health of students is the mental health part, and the outdoors is a big part of that, and it helps to calm people down, tense, anxiety-ridden students or adults. The outdoors is a great place to decompress, wonderful place. So this talks a lot about that, but it also gives many, I think about 40 concrete examples of things that parents can do with their children. This one probably has even more than the other book, Sharing Nature with Children, has many also. Some of them are very game-like, where if you had four or five kids together, you might want to create some of the games. But both are wonderful resources for activities. The web, you going to the internet, is a good place to look for nature activities as well. Audubon, Natural Society, fabulous. And of course, many of the other nonprofit naturalist societies that would be good too. National Wildlife Federation, things like that. But these are my two best sources. I really enjoy these, so I would highly recommend them. Peterson Guides. I also wanted to mention Audubon and Peterson both make field guides, and Peterson makes a first field guide, and those are wonderful for children and for parents because most of us are not going to be a career naturalist. So it's nice to know the four or five or 10 birds that frequent the bird feeder outside your house, or the birds in your neighborhood, or the trees in your neighborhood.
The
Peterson guides are only for birds, or are they for other things?
They're for everything. The Peterson guides run the gamut. They'll have Peterson guides for rocks and minerals. They'll have guides for birds, for wildflowers, for insects, for just about everything you can think of. They're a wonderful, rich resource for parents and for children. I like the first guides when kids are getting to the level where they can start to learn how to look up their own information with help of a parent, but they're wonderful for looking up things. And that's why I like that Wonder Why stuff, because you can wonder why and go look it up. It's great.
Well, Laurie Jenkins, you have been a wonderful resource for all of us who are interested in helping our children, young or older, enjoy and appreciate and be enriched by the outdoors. So thanks very much for being with us on Parents Perspective.
Thank you very much for inviting me today.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 448 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or organizations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents Perspective. Parents Perspective Incorporated is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Donations can be made online through GiveDirect or iGive.com or MissionFish at eBay. Or you could mail a check to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015, and thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Archie Moore. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.